Howdy. This is a fuck.
Welcome to the fail.
No. I got this. All right. Welcome to the Art of the Fail. This is a podcast hosted by Christian Borgazan, co-founder of Bruja, and myself, Chris Buttonham, co-founder of Obi.ai. We chat with startups and entrepreneurs about their failures in hopes to uncover incredible lessons and unmask the stigma around failing today. Nobody likes this shit. Let's just get started with the show.
So for this season, what Chris and myself have done is we've brought on an incredible sponsor. And, well, to be honest, the main reason for that is because we're broke and we wanted more money.
Yeah, what do you think we do this for? Of course, you know, I like hanging out with you, buddy. I like hanging out with you. I like bringing on the guests, but we're entrepreneurs. We get with it, right? We got to monetize this bitch. So we brought on a kick-ass sponsor, Stones & Hustle. Stones & Hustle is the ultimate lifestyle brand for entrepreneurs and hustlers of all shapes and sizes. So if you haven't checked out the video podcast on YouTube, where you been, go there, okay? Go check out The Art of the Fail on YouTube, and then you'll see some amazing threads that we've been wearing all season long. We got t-shirts, we got hats, and you can get that and join the movement at stonesandhustle.com. Stonesandhustle.com, get your gear, join the movement, and keep hustling.
When you're ready.
Alrighty, alright, so what is going on, everyone? Welcome back to the show. In case you didn't know, or in case you clicked on a wrong link, you are listening or watching season two of The Art of the Fail. And you know, the reason why I said that is because that does happen. I click on wrong links sometimes, and I'm guilty of it. But hopefully you meant to click on this one. We're happy to have you watching the show and listening in. Today, as always, we have another great guest for you. And yeah, it's going to be a great episode, as always. So we're joined by someone who is very, very, very active in the startup community, not only in Toronto, but actually just across Canada as a whole. Our guest today is Edwin Frondoso. Edwin, you are the Chief Product Officer of Sling and co-founder of Slingshot VoIP, as well as a host of your own podcast, the Business Leadership Podcast. So Edwin, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. So excited to be here. I love the new set. I mean, I feel like I need to upgrade my game. I feel like I shouldn't even have a video. It's a total fail. But that great job, guys, and I'm so happy. I was really pumped and excited to be on your show because you guys have an amazing flow. So hopefully awesome. I could add value here.
Yeah, we're excited to have you on.
You will. Yeah.
Yeah, we like to just you know, make things anecdotal and just have a conversation rather than, you know, try and be thought leaders in any sort of way, shape, or form.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, our whole thing is, and it seems to be going pretty well for now, it's just
it's like the anti-thought leader.
It's just like, you know, at the end of the day, like Chris said, we want to have real conversations. So it's about being real, raw, and at the end of the day, unfiltered. You know, let's say it how it is. Obviously, this is a show about failures and fuck-ups, so yeah, that's what we're here to talk about.
Awesome,
before we get into the meaty stuff, we'll do our little rapid, I gotta use the quotation marks, rapid fire questions, because they haven't been so rapid. But yeah, let's get started. Edwin, what did you have for breakfast this morning?
I had a croissant.
A croissant. How many hours of sleep a night would you say that you average?
6.5.
Okay, good number. I'm about 7. Apple or iPhone?
iPhone. Apple or iPhone? Is that a trick
Sorry.
Question?
Sorry, wow, Android. That is a fuck up there.
Or
actually, you know what? That is a trick question.
he took a second to think about it.
It's so funny. I was thinking of when I wrote that out. I have my little Microsoft Surface here. When I wrote that out, I was thinking of Android, but I wrote Apple already knowing that iPhone was coming after that. So my mind is actually playing tricks on me.
I like it.
So Android or iPhone? You thought about that one, though. You're like, wait a minute.
I mean, I was like, I think he's trying to get me here. I don't know. Although I do, because I do a lot of development, so I do have an Android right beside me and an Apple, but I do I use my iPhone as my everyday.
Awesome. How many episodes of your own podcast have you now recorded?
I believe I released number 62 this week.
Right on. Congrats on that. That's a big number. Good for you. How many podcasts have you been on as a guest?
Not many. I think there's three or four right now. Yeah, I have a couple coming, but yeah, today just three, I think. So
awesome. What was, from your own podcast, what has been your favorite episode today? Or, you know, it could be two or three episodes that maybe our listeners might want to listen to themselves.
I always refer, super, it was a pleasure to have Seth Godin on my show. I mean, he blew my mind, and he's always like was able to educate and really really teach, and I tried to ask him really really good questions. But one that I always like to mention when I'm in conversations is one of my earlier episodes with Hamza Tahrani. He's the CEO of Compass Digital Labs out of Mississauga. So they're, you know, they have shops across North America. But I had asked him, because his journey. So the idea of my podcast is to share journeys of leaders, whether they're entrepreneurs or executives, is how they got to where they are today. And he basically said, when I realized that if I could solve business problems with technology, I could provide value to the company, and then I could do that. So how did he do that? He basically said, I knocked on every director's door of my company at the time. I think if I remember correctly, it was like at TELUS. So he was still first line. And he basically went into every director. It's open door policy, right? It's, you know, that's not all the corporates say, right? And he went in and just said, what are your goals this year and how can I help you achieve it? I mean, if you're a director, you're like, oh, I have tons of goals and I'm going to give it to this kid. Yeah, sure. Why not? And and instant visibility for him. And not only that, if you're able to step up to the plate, and that this is all extra work on your side, right? So
absolutely.
That's sort of one of my key insights. I mean, I've had amazing guests. I got to write like at least some type of page, like all these key learnings from each of the business leaders I've had.
Yeah.
But that's the one that, you know, could provide, you know, for the listeners out there. It's like, oh, I'm listening to Edwin and, you know, I'm on this podcast now. It's like, why don't I just talk to my director right now? Like, if you're listening, you gotta get out, stop listening, and just go listen, talk to these people. They're not gonna say no.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Two more questions for you. So why entrepreneurship for you?
Oh my God, I'm a restless mofo. Let me tell you, man.
Love it.
I like to learn new things. I'm always dabbling in things. I mean, I've worked in enterprise. I've worked in IBM. I worked at Nortel. I've worked at small companies, and I mean, I've been an entrepreneur 13 years now, for the most part. So just hustling and doing it, and I love the energy. Of course, you guys know the highs are high,
and the lows are like lows.
The lows are like, don't even talk to me, man. Yeah,
the lows are lower than low. The lows suck.
Oh my God.
But it's
and
those
if you're an entrepreneur, you know this.
Yeah.
You know this.
Absolutely. All right, last question, arguably the most important one, I would say. Are you ready to get started and start talking about some failures of your own?
I'm a little scared what you're going to ask, but yeah, let's do this.
Awesome. I guess, you're someone who has been so involved in entrepreneurship and the startup community. Like you were just saying, you know, you've been an entrepreneur for 13 years. You've had various different positions in your career kind of leading up to where you are now. You run your own businesses, you host your own podcast where you do talk to other entrepreneurs, or whether that's C-level executives in large companies. Naturally, with that territory comes a lot of failures. So whether that's, you know, you hearing about or just coming across other people's failures, or your own. And I'm sure, you know, to get to where you are, there had to be a lot of failures and challenges to kind of weed through that to get to that level of success where you're at right now. So maybe kind of take us through your journey, some of those earlier failures. If you wanted to, maybe we could even like start backwards. Tell us a little bit about Slingshot VoIP, what you're currently doing now, and then we can kind of like reverse engineer it. I don't know, Chris, maybe you want to
say something different?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, so I could do that. I don't know how much time we have for my failures. I have so many that I already like to close those memory cells, but it's definitely a building block. But Slingshot VoIP, we're a telecommunications company. We provide business VoIP services just for regular small to medium-sized enterprises. We're looking into call center, and now we are looking into more of the natural language, artificial intelligence applications in call centers. So companies, large organizations now, they have call centers, and no one really likes to pick up the phone and call a call center, right? But when they do, the experience is not the greatest. And then when you get to the agent, sometimes it's not very quickly. It could be something easy. So what we're looking at is really utilizing the tools of voice recognition and the data that the organizations have, where they could, taking in the language, using the data and artificial intelligence, we should be able to tell the agent, oh, this guy's just started his conversation to explain his problem. The agent should know right away, say, oh, this guy's probably calling about this onboarding situation because of the words he said or what he's doing or how long he's been in a client. So trying to lead the agent to the solution quicker, because agent's job is just to talk and make sure you're okay and ask more questions. But if I could know that, oh, this is actually a problem for this, I could ask that question right away and say, oh, are you having an issue on this? And they'll be like, oh my God, how did you read my mind? Like, that's sort of what I'm excited about. I mean, that's all the new stuff, and we'll see how that goes.
Did you see either one of you, the Google Duplex
calling
demo
for an appointment?
At Google I.O.? Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I did.
Yeah.
It was cool, man.
It was incredible.
It kind of, to be honest, I don't know about how you two feel about that. It kind of, like, it was exciting to see. I think voice technology, like the industry of that, the way it's going is just super exciting. But that kind of gave me chills because that was based off of that demo that they showcased. You wouldn't have known that was a robot, essentially, that you were talking to. Like, that is
crazy. Well, yeah, I mean,
crazy.
Being in the conversational commerce space, for lack of a better term, I don't think anyone really knew how far ahead Google was until that demo, at least in my own opinion, when it comes to natural language processing and some of the AI they have around that space. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And just imagine, Google is not even the folks that have been doing it for the longest, right? So yeah, I mean, they have a huge marketing. It's hard to even fathom what the companies that are like amazing at this, right?
Yeah,
Like, who knows what they're doing at this point? And who knows if the robot's in my room right now? Who knows?
Yeah, and that's such a good point, because it's all, unless you're working in that industry directly and you're, I guess one of the individuals who are kind of in the trenches working on that technology specifically, it's very behind the scenes for a lot of people. So then coming out with something like this is kind of like, whoa.
They said something like it was a product of, I don't know, a crazy amount of money worth of investments and acquisitions over the last 10 years in NLU and NLP technology. It was pretty cool.
Oh, I'm excited. A little scared, but excited mostly.
That's good. The Naturally. Paranoid succeed.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Cool. So, Adam, why don't we take a step back now that we know a little bit more about you and what you do now? Let's take a step back. Where did your journey begin? Mm-hmm. That's usually when we get into some of the meat.
Yeah, I mean, I could go way back to
go
my
way
journey.
Back.
Like, let's
when
go
I was
way
born,
back.
Like, we could start there. Is that too far back?
I think a little bit. A couple years forward.
No, I mean, I graduated from computer engineering from Carleton, and this was like during the first internet bubble. I graduated in 2000 and I worked at Nortel Networks, but I was part of the I was the bigger fail of Canadian enterprise where we couldn't get proper management in place or executives or whatnot. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I was like 24 at the time, and you know, someone gives a 24-year-old, I was getting paid well at the time, you know, half a year's worth of salary just to walk away. I was like dancing out of the door. So it was like, yeah, see you later.
So you were part of the big Nortel downfall.
I was the start of it. Yeah, yeah. Definitely. I mean, we had 100,000 employees at the time worldwide, right? So it was there's a lot of people. I mean, I was my internship in Ottawa in 98 when the real internet was coming up. I mean, I was in the marketing department. They were giving away cars for like prizes. Like this blew my mind. I was like 22-year-old seeing this, you know, helping build what the internet is today, because I was in marketing and we were like selling the dream of video on demand, and that mm-hmm. stuff never came till 10 years later, right? So I was just like, I mean, we just dreaming this stuff up. I had no idea what it meant 10 years later. But yeah, so fast forward, then I'm like, oh, you know what, I'm gonna be an entrepreneur. Met some friends who just came back from a world trip, and these guys were all engineers and pretty forward thinking, and we had, oh, you know what, we're gonna build, Wi-Fi was not even around at the time, right? But it's just mm-hmm. starting. And I'm like, oh, let's build a business around Wi-Fi. I think Wi-Fi is gonna be a thing. I think everyone's gonna want Wi-Fi in their apartment and their building. So we had this business idea to sell to multiple dwelling units. So like condos or apartments. And I mean, this is my first real go at sales. Yep. And it failed terribly, man. Like we spent maybe a year long, and then we're like, you know what, let's, for our last hurrah before we quit, let's spend some money and go to a trade show. So we spent money, we built this thing, we had some demos, we bought demo equipment from this one vendor that had Wi-Fi equipment out of Montreal, and we just blew people's mind away at the show, and we had no idea how to close deals after that. So it was just like, oh my god, we just young dudes doing some marketing, yeah. creating some pilot stuff. I think startups call it now 10 years later, you know, trying to build your MVP, yeah. or being lean. Mm-hmm. I didn't know any of that stuff. I was just hustling.
So what do you think went wrong with that company?
I mean, I think it was more like it was like a clubhouse more so than anything. I mean, it's like, oh, here's a bunch of dudes. A bunch of smart guys. Maybe some people are doing it for other reasons. I mean, the people I worked with, only one of the guys is still an entrepreneur and I work with still, right? So mm-hmm. it's just like, hey, let's try this. This is cool. But when, you know, push comes to shove, your early 20s, you yeah. want to go party, you want to date women, you need money, man.
Yeah. So
a lot of people go get jobs, and then
the idea of entrepreneurship was more attractive than actually putting in the work.
Oh, exactly. And then, but that gave me a really good idea in terms of what it took, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Also, business development and sales. Like, none of us did that. We didn't know. And it's not like we were selling $100 items, like for the computer or anything like that. We were trying to sell some type of solution into buildings. Like, who, like, I had no idea how much it would cost to like even cable up a building, and we're trying to mm-hmm. talk about that. Mm-hmm. Like, it's I think we tried to bite off a big solution, which at the time, I mean, looking back, it's like, oh, we just had to keep pushing and working. But I mean, it's, you know, you fail and you're like, ah, okay, let's go party.
Yeah.
So it was easy.
I just want to double click on, because, you know, you keep bringing up that a lot of the failures there were with the selling process with that company, and that there was a lot of lack of experience amongst the, I'm assuming that you all were business partners at the time.
Yes.
What was that like? Like, what was your sales approach? What were the responses getting? In the midst of all that, like, where did the true failure come from? Was it just like not understanding, you know, a sales cycle of that? Was it not really understanding the full requirements from start to finish of maybe installing the product or the service? Like, what, you know, where did that failure stem from?
You answered it all, I think. I like it. You read my mind. No, I think it was everything, right? It's being a new entrepreneur.
Yeah.
It's like we never even got a pilot location, right? Even really understand, you know, what does it cost? Like, now looking back, I know everything about cabling and stuff for how I got the slingshot. But I mean, like, I didn't know anything about risers in a building where cables go up and down, and who owns the risers, how much of the cables do that, where are we going to put the equipment for the Wi-Fi, how are we going to resell this to users? Like, we were just doing a master's paper. Like, we were just, you know, we were spending more time. Like, okay, let's build the business development plan. Let's build our business plan. This is what the solution will look like. And then we would pitch this to us. You guys got to keep in mind, no one had Wi-Fi. So we were selling a dream too, right? So it's, I mean, it's looking back, it's like, yeah, we were probably 5 years ahead. Like, if we stuck with it, we would have crushed all the Wi-Fi installations
everywhere. Well, that's kind of what I was, you know, what's been going through my mind hearing you talk about this. Like, it sounds like you guys were definitely way ahead of everyone else kind of getting to the market with that. But I think maybe too early, right? Maybe, like, it wasn't, I think it probably, where it failed too, was just a lack of, you know, awareness for one, but even like education for people about this.
Yeah, sure. It was a new thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're all marketers now around the room here, right?
Yep.
I mean, maybe we didn't have a small thing. Maybe we should have done webinars. I mean, there's no webinars back then. Maybe we should have done lunch and learns or whatever the case is in terms of education and build it. Maybe we needed another service to sell and not go for the gold, right? It's, I mean, that's all experience to me when it comes to entrepreneurship or business development or building relationships. We didn't know how long it's going to take to do that, right? I mean, we were looking at the time when we did put up a quote or two. This was a couple $100,000. Like, this is more money I ever looked at in terms of sending out a quote when I was at that age, right? So, anyways.
What's interesting you mentioned was you, by the end of it, you sort of learned or you got a better understanding of what it would take to be an entrepreneur or build a business. And so do you think that was a huge, like, for you, you said you had, would you have two or three, like, partners or co-founders?
Yeah, that back then, I think there was like four of us. Yeah. So it was a lot of us, right? Mm-hmm.
And so it probably, I guess what you're saying is it set, it separated who was serious and who wasn't. And then I guess what my question is how you said that you learned what it would take. Was that, do you think, a necessary exercise for now building your current businesses?
Oh, 100%. I believe I'm still creating experiences and failures that are helping me get to the next step. For sure a big point in my life when it came to entrepreneurship. Now, having said that, when we all basically threw in the towel, I mean, I ended up working at IBM and it was my first sales job. So this is now we're talking about Edwin's finally getting sales training. It takes to, like, what I never knew the term ABCs, always be closing before that. So, you know, and now I'm around people who are fast talkers, learning how to, maybe I did this naturally, but I didn't understand the process of it. So going into IBM, Big Blue, the corporate enterprise, where I didn't even have to sell, people knew the brand. So, I mean, that's the other side of it. I didn't stay there long. I mean, I was bored probably within 6 months, but I left after a year.
Was that strategic going into sales after?
I was actually about to ask the exact same question. I was actually going to ask, backtrack a little bit. What was, like, the final hoorah? I know that you mentioned you guys decided to go to a trade show, but, like, what was the final straw where the group was like, all right, let's close down this business. We're all going to kind of, you know, part our own ways, go into something else, maybe start another company, whatever. Like, what was the final straw? And then, was that a strategic move or, like, planned on your end going into sales to get that experience?
Right. I think the final straw, when I look back, and thank you for asking me all these, this is making me relive my life.
That's what we do, the good and the bad.
I already closed that memory box, yeah. Man. I was just kidding.
Open it up.
Honestly, when we look back, I think it was a combination of which we spent over a year, not even nearly enough now that I know how startups and everything work, but we spent over a year and a half trying to push this together. You know, we would all get together every place. We had a place to work, someone's basement. It was just, like I said, it was being in the 20s. We didn't close deals. We had some leads. We didn't know how to follow up. Mm-hmm. And then people had their personal, you know, some people had school debt. Like, this is, you know, it was the dream from the beginnings kept going down and down because there was no close. There weren't, I mean, the small wins, when I look at it back, were all these leads we had. Mm-hmm. But now we had all these leads. It takes time to create that relationship. And I don't think any of us understood what to do with those leads. And I think that was the breaking point.
Right. So yeah. Then what happened after that company? You went and you said you worked for IBM for a while.
Yeah.
And then what was the sort of cadence after that?
Mm-hmm. IBM. I worked IBM a year, I think year and a half. And I was in sales, and I'm like, oh man, I gotta get out of the corporate. Like, I like it. I learned a lot there, and seeing how enterprise works, and how, like, I mean, selling IBM is really easy because people know the brand. Mm-hmm. So I found an opportunity. So I was an inside sales guy. I found a smaller company, I think 10 shop, like it's startup at the time per se, but more in a services business, and some telecommunications. Mm-hmm. And they wanted me, even though I was very, like, not even a year, like a year in sales. He's like the manager, or he liked the way I talked, the way I looked at people. And he hired me for some account, outside sales account executive role. Mm-hmm. And he was like, you know what, let's teach you how to do that. And it was great. This was still, there's no voice over IP at the time. The big players like Nortel, Cisco, all these guys started providing these VoIP products, hardware. And two things were happening at the time. I mean, these were people who were just sales. These were all type A sales guys, close the deals, take people golfing, and, you know, building relationships that way, giving gifts. Like, I never even, like, oh, this guy gives, like, my boss would give, like, golf clubs to, like, his client. I'm like, what the hell's happening here? Like, it was a different game from, you know, IBM.
Yeah.
But the owners at the time too also saw my entrepreneurial, or my go-getter mindset. So they were trying to build a new business on the side. And they're like, hey, Edwin, you want to run with this for a bit? So there was two things. I was trying to sell account, you know, these telecommunication solutions. And then there's this wholesale business and telecommunications they wanted to build. So they're like, oh, I said, sure, let's try it out. So I started building that on the side, and I was crushing it. And at the same time, I sold the first voice over IP, like, $50,000 deal for this company that they never did. So I'm just like, what's happening here? I'm selling, I'm breaking down barriers, and I'm building these guys' business. Oh, man. And then at the same time, one of my business partners, he just finished his PhD from my previous company. He just came back from Europe. He had finished a PhD. And I told him, hey, I found this thing called Asterix, which is voice over IP, open source. I think we could sell this. I think we can make a business out of this. So I had quit my job there, and I went to Europe for like a month. Mm-hmm. First, just like, oh yeah, this is my release into the working world again. And that was the last time I got a regular paycheck.
Nice, nice. Okay. And so, you know, being through this journey, you know, entrepreneur to corporate world to back to entrepreneur, and you work with a lot of startups. What do you see any, you know, macro or even micro trends as it relates to failure, and then how that relates to, you know, people's mm-hmm. journey with their companies or ventures?
Oh man, I mean, I see a lot. I see a lot. I mean, I see a lot from the new startups, the new entrepreneurs. I see it for the companies that are scaling, for my friends and the people I talk to all mm-hmm. the time. I mean, micro, it's all personal growth, to be quite honest. I mean, this is me looking back and the stuff that I'm passionate about, because I'm always ever learning, and I'm like, I journal every day and I do that. But I mean, the entrepreneurs that get that early success easily, I think, and then they have to redo it, I think it's harder for these people because they didn't know what made them successful. Right. Maybe they were just lucky.
Yeah.
Or they were
timing
just this.
Was on
they
their
didn't.
Side or...
Yeah, or timing. I mean, which could be some of their successes, right? But ultimately, I've talked to entrepreneurs like, oh man, I built this business, it was so great, and the timing was right, and now I'm trying to build this thing, and it's frigging hard, man. Mm-hmm. Like, how come I can't replicate this? And it's, you know, it's, I think the having those early failures in your career as an entrepreneur, whether it's like failing to close a deal or losing a customer, or I mean, I'm sure any entrepreneur that's listening, like, you know, you deliver a service or a product, and you got to chase the person like in 6 months to get paid. Like, why can't you just pay me? Like, I don't get that. You know, until the mindset for the entrepreneur is like, you know what, you pay me up front and then I'll do the service. Like that's a little confidence in like, I know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. Like, you're hiring me because I'm me, I'm an expert, and you like what I'm saying. So why don't you give me money now and I'll deliver 110%, right? So that's, I think, getting to that confidence when you're a first entrepreneur, you're like, you'll say yes to everything, mm-hmm, not even take a deposit. Like,
that's
oh my
true.
God, like don't. And then not only that, you're gonna not gonna take a deposit, and you're gonna discount heavily.
Guilty of that.
Yeah.
And not even knowing that that's probably a client you don't even want to work with at the end of the day, because they're so needy, they don't know what they want. Now you're like, and then you gotta chase them. My God, that's the worst failure ever, I think.
Yeah, and that's funny too, because that series of everything that you just talked about, like, we've been through that many times, and I'm just like, I'm going through my head of these like personal memories of me going through that, even working with, you know, specific people, that it's like, you know what, maybe it was at a point where we were just starting the business, and because of that we really wanted to work with them or thought that we had to. But at the end of the day, you know, as you grow and as you get better and as you learn and as you fail and overcome those failures, you start to learn like, okay, maybe they're not a good fit for you.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you don't actually need to work with that individual or that organization. But I do think that does come with time and obviously having to go through those experiences personally.
But you just to add that, and the craziest thing about that thought process is, before you even think about firing them,
I think
because I've gone through this, and I continually go through this as well, is like, you know, you sit down with your client that you feel that it's a difficult or it's too much, and you 100% transparent with them, they're more likely either to say, okay, see you later, let's close, thank you for doing business, I understand that you're growing, or more likely they'll say, you know what, let's pay the difference, I'll pay you, I want to work with you, and I'm so happy with our relationship, you know. But then, you know, if they upfront their money and you still don't like the person, it's kind of like, that's a different game now.
Yeah. No, but that's a good point, is just being transparent and open and being, you know, as upfront with clients as possible.
And being grateful, because they
being
did
very
give you
grateful
that chance.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah, they gave you the chance to, you know, you were a nobody, nobody, but in terms of like that experience, and they gave you a world of knowledge because of those chasing you down, or, you know, like, I feel the pain already.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the irony of that is too, because you are sort of, what's the word? Naive or what have you, or inexperienced in that regard, you are, like we said, sort of more more willing to take more shit in those relationships. And I know, at least personally, one of the biggest sort of learning curves that I went through was firing a client particularly because we're sort of a community, like, out of the box product, they were just not even close to an ideal customer for us, and that could have really, and it did for a while, send us down a rabbit hole of the wrong product roadmap,
requests, the,
you know, all kinds of, you know, feedback, eating up our time, which would have been fine had there have been sort of a long term, you know, macro benefit from that. It was just hell. And and yeah, I mean, that was a huge, huge learning experience to say, look, you're not a fit for us, and we're not a fit for you, even though do we ever need that money? And like, we thank you so much for taking a chance on us early on.
Yeah. Exactly. And well, that's big of you too, right? It's not easy to get to that point.
No.
I mean, business, and it comes back to the original business is business. It's not personal, right? So we got to keep that in mind as entrepreneurs, right?
Yeah, it's true.
Absolutely.
Now, with Slingshot, has it been all like roses and flowers, or has there been some hiccups? How long has the journey with Slingshot been?
Oh, man, there was no flowers. Yeah. I'm just kidding. If I took you back to the time where I said, "Oh, I'm gonna quit my job, go to Europe, and start this VoIP company."
Yep.
That was sort of the beginning essence of Slingshot, but it took us a long time. Like I was being that lean MVP dude. I never called it that at the time. I just thought, let's get customers. Let's just get customers. I would go into like financial services, downtown Toronto. I'd be like, I was just a reseller at the time, but that was my bait and switch. So I had that lower product now to sell, to build relationships, and then I had two or three other packages. I was like, okay, you're with Bell Canada, which is an incumbent here in Canada, or you know, this is your rates. We could switch you over to this, and if you need this purchase, I could sell you this Nortel box, or I have this third option. It's called, I didn't really have a name for it. It's called Edwin's VoIP Services, and we'll offer all these. We will offer all these what we just said.
Yeah.
You don't have to buy hardware, and it will be cost this much a month. And it was a no, like people signed up. We didn't even have the product. So we went back and we like, literally I have pictures, our servers in basements, internet service coming over the wire. It's scary as hell. And going back to these customers, and when those servers go down, like this is before AWS.
Yeah.
This is before how easy it is to launch a product. I mean, for all the startups out there, they have no idea how hard it was
running
to start
a server farm in your basement.
Running a server, running like keep it uptime, that maintenance, and and when they complain how much AWS is, like you go host your own server, man.
Yeah.
Like find out how much like a battery pack is. Like it's not cheap, man.
Yeah.
And then you need the administrators, or you did that. So the scariest stuff is when that stuff broke. Those are people's businesses that they have no phone service. And I've gone through a lot of that. I have hard skin.
Yeah.
I have hard skin. So when I hear entrepreneurs telling me, oh my God, my customer, I'm like, come on. That customer is not, you know, people could email them. People could phone them. Maybe they're not getting their, I don't know what service they're providing. Maybe they're not able to tweet someone at this time, but I'm sure they'll live.
Yeah, totally. So was there ever a time, maybe in those early days where you just, you know, looked at yourself and said, I can't do this anymore. Like the stress of these servers lighting my house on fire.
I still do that. Now. I'm like on essential. I realized recently that I am essential business services. Like I am, as much as people have email, internet, but people who pay us for phone, business phone, that's serious stuff. Especially if they have inbound or their sales center or that or that's that like I have CEOs text me sometimes like, hey Edwin, is there something wrong with your system? And there's not, but because just the nature of the business, you know what I mean? I mean, I've had times in those early days when I would get into some of these organizations through business partners that are like in IT. I mean, I've been thrown under the bus, man, by like these people who brought me in, and I'm in a boardroom, people like just hammering me down, and I'm just sitting there like
just smiling, nodding,
not smiling at the time because it's not funny to them, right? But you can't smile when they're upset.
Yeah,
that's super tricky. not to like create this pity party or anything, but I can totally relate with that, particularly like with the type of business you run, and like there's so many facets to what could go wrong, and mm-hmm. oftentimes maybe it's not on your plate, but emotionally and physically maybe it is. Like mm-hmm. just last night, so we built a product on top of Slack, and Slack had an API outage. And we had like five or six support tickets come in saying, oh, Obi's not working. And then, of course, my fucking, my blood starts boiling. I'm like calling my CTO, like, what's going on? And he'll laugh if he's listening to this. But I always give him shit for sending me like the Slack status page. But sure enough, last night, Slack had an outage. And so I tried like another app built on the Slack platform, and it didn't respond. So I was like, well, that makes me feel a little bit better.
So your customers don't care.
Yeah, no, they don't. They don't. Yeah. They don't. Like, why isn't Obi working? Well, it's out of our hands. But like we said, at the end of the day, it's still on our shoulders to take that burden.
Well, I mean, and it's really understanding, and I'm so grateful for all the customers that trust me. You know, I have some customers, you know, paying up multiple thousands a month, right? Yeah. So it's, but man, like, still, like you say, I'm still like, as we're still growing, it's just like, oh my god, this is sitting. I mean, you know, I look at friends' businesses that like just blow up. I'm like, mm-hmm, they're not mm-hmm. even essential services. Why didn't I do that?
Yeah,
what's wrong? I'm nuts. Yeah, like, what's going on here? Yeah. But yeah, that's, I mean, it's huge learnings. It's huge. I mean, we're all in the cloud now, all our services, obviously, but it's crazy, man.
Yeah, definitely. Awesome, Edwin. Well, was there anything that you wanted to talk mm-hmm. about before we end off with a small little bit that we always end off with?
No, I mean, I think embrace, really just embrace these challenges you're in. I mean, it may seem like we joke about it earlier in the call was that the low is really low. Mm-hmm. It's really dark.
It is.
But if you're at the bottom, there's only one way to go, man.
It only goes up from there.
It's going to go up and down anyways.
Yeah.
Do you, quick question for that. Do you see, given that you've I'm assuming you've dealt with or interfaced with a lot of entrepreneurs and founders, do you see a particular demeanor or personality set, something I'm pretty interested in, that maybe ventures well more efficiently as an entrepreneur than a personality or a demeanor that perhaps doesn't, if that makes any sense?
That's a great question, and I've thought about that many a times. Like, I think the resiliency mm-hmm. is built over time, as long as you really have the belief and commitment. I think personality traits for entrepreneurs, we have this common drive and belief in ourselves, but I don't think there's that one prototypical person that you could identify right when, maybe you can now, I don't know, with AI and robotics, that you could identify, Chris is going to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
We're going to give him tens of millions of dollars because he has the right personality.
Yeah.
I don't know if we're there yet. Yeah. Like, I don't know. I think it's a matter of that self-confidence, belief, and really just keep going. Like, right. Like, this is the whole thing, right? Yeah. It's just
absolutely
like when shit hits the fan, man, it's not pretty, man.
Yeah.
No, it is not.
So when you were like 6 years old, did you think you were going to be an entrepreneur?
I didn't think anything at 6 years old. I was playing with cars, man. Yeah. I think maybe the entrepreneurial path is in, and I've heard this many times, is like a newspaper route. I had a newspaper route, but not at 6 years old. Mm-hmm. I think
you,
I was.
You
like,
know, you did you? Okay, so interesting question, because some people, it's increasingly not as apparent in our generations, but. When you were growing up, did you have were you going to be a police officer, or a fireman? You know,
architect.
Architect.
I think I was an architect.
Interesting.
When I was in late elementary to high school, but I mean, I didn't have. I'm a Generation X, so entrepreneurship wasn't as popular you know, in the 80s and 90s, it was just, you know, you get a job or whatnot. So I was already confused. I didn't have the startup community that I could say, oh, look, I could do this. You're doing it. I could do that. Like, I didn't have that. I didn't know who were an entrepreneur. Like, it's, they don't
teach
this.
Should have stayed unpopular.
You know, it should have because a lot of people are misguided. I hang out with a lot of early 20 years old, and it's a different game because it's the marketing out there or the thought leaders are saying go into entrepreneurship. You know, they're not telling you these, like, when shit hits the fan, it stinks, man, and it's bad, and you gotta live in it for a bit. Like, it's
by a bit, you mean for a long time. If you
you gotta breathe it in until it's normal. It's
absolutely,
like, oh, it actually
smells
not that bad.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you brought that up, because
we talk about
that
it almost
is something
every episode.
That we talk about either every episode, but, you know, when we're not recording or filming, you know, behind the scenes, this is something that Chris and myself are pretty passionate about, is the state of the industry and what, you know, what these people who have this influence, what a lot of them are putting out there, you know, that entrepreneurship is this, like, glorified thing that you need to do, that you need to chase. Like, I think it's good. Yeah, encourage people, by all means, like, encourage people to become go-getters and self-starters, but, you know, you can't misguide them. You have to give them anecdotal evidence that, yeah, when shit hits the fan, and, like, you know what, you might go through depression. Like, the lows can be lows. Like, you might you might get in your head, you know, and it's not sunshine and rainbows. It is very, very, very tough. But yeah, I'm glad that, you know, not to go down that rabbit hole or anything, but I'm just glad that you brought that up, because absolutely, we 100% agree with that.
Well, exactly. No, I mean, I'm passionate about it. I mean, I'm also in the opinion now that if you want to be an entrepreneur, maybe you should work for a startup.
Yeah.
Like, see what it's really about, because if you have that passion for startup or entrepreneurship, you know, you're taking no risk working for an amazing guy who has that or woman who has the resilience or that vision. Because people who want to be an entrepreneur, and not to take any away from anyone listening, I mean, getting one customer may not be that difficult. How about getting 10? How about 100? Like, it's that game of just getting one multiplied by 10. That's how hard it is to get 10.
Absolutely.
And then multiply that by 100 to get 100. I mean, you might get better at it, but it's still that, you know, it's not easy getting one customer.
No, it's not.
I would even change that to say, any young person should leave university, particularly if they're gonna go into business or even some of, like, the arts, which all really will be technology very soon. They should just work for a startup as opposed to going and getting a job at TD or Chase Bank or something like that, because you will learn so much across a bunch of different disciplines, and almost certainly you have no idea what you want to do coming out, you know, even if you think you do.
Yeah. Well, 100%.
Yeah.
And I think to add on to that, I think the enterprise should be like the TDs or these financial institutes, they should be hiring from startups now, because they need those innovative people who know more than just their job or the expertise. I actually think that might be the trend coming too, because startups are a great ground for people to learn learn a lot.
Yeah. And you might learn that, like we said, I think this yesterday, that you are a good number two, number three, and number four, having done that, and you're happy. You're happier than a pig in shit doing that. And so,
I'd be a good number two at, like, Facebook, I think.
Yeah.
Putting it out there.
Yeah, sign me up. I'll be a number three.
But that's important. I'm glad you said that, Christian, because I was, like, as you were talking and I was thinking out loud, I'm trying to. We were just talking about this morning.
I'm
really passionate about trying to make sure that this podcast doesn't go down this angle of motivational speaking or thought leadership or like us claiming that we have all the answers. We would love the art of the fail to be maybe a vision. If I can stake it in the ground right now for the first time ever, would be to.
I was there.
To have the Art of the Fail be a catalyst or a, you know, a starting point for people to understand and recognize all of the shit that you have to go through in business mm-hmm. and in life. Like we want to talk to anyone that's just interesting and have had life experiences, not only to motivate them to get started because there's plenty of motivation on the internet, but to show them that it sucks. Life is suffering, business is suffering, but you know, it's that healthy balance of like, okay, this is the shit you're gonna go through, so you know, make sure your expectations are in check.
Yeah.
But that also good success can come through this from pushing forward and continuing on.
Exactly.
I love it.
Yeah.
Any way I could help, let me know.
Definitely. Definitely.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Evan, for coming
on. One last question.
Yeah.
Are you getting to
it? Of course.
Okay.
I don't forget. I don't forget. Edwin, one thing we do at the end. Hold
on. There we go.
Oh. Edwin.
That was on cue, right?
That was on cue.
Absolutely. Everything we do is on cue, if you haven't noticed.
Sometimes I feel like you guys are like that.
Yeah. we're just that good, you know?
We're that good at failing.
Yeah, exactly. There's a reason why we're host of a podcast around failure.
Perfectly right now, yeah.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, no, it actually, it just cut out for a quick second there, our audio, but I think, I'm not sure, is it back up, record.
All right, we're back. God damn.
All right.
So the last thing that we'd like to wrap up with, Edwin, is to ask you who you would like to see on the Art of the Fail. Who would you call out? What you might know them, you might not know them. Who would be a good person to share some stories and their journey?
Oh my God.
Putting you in the hot seat.
That's a great question. I mean, the one that came to mind, I'll just tell you the one that came to mind.
Yeah, please do.
But it's probably impossible to get him. For one, he's
a challenge.
He's not alive.
Okay. That's a tall mountain to climb.
That's a tall mountain, but the one I was going to – I'm just going to tell you because it came to mind.
Yeah.
When I was building out, you know, this slingshot at the time, I was like, man, I'd love to – talk to Ted Rogers, like he built this telecom thing. Yeah. And he's from Toronto. You know what I mean? It was like, I'd love to hear what he did to really, like, you know, pioneer that. I mean, there's a lot of these type of pioneers in telecommunications.
Yep.
So that might be the challenge, because there's many of them who did start, and I think one of the top five richest people are in telecom in the world. It would be really that, because building the internet today is the backbone is the phone network still.
Yeah. No, I love that answer, actually. That you understood the question. Like, you what do you want to see? Like, who do you want to hear from, right? And I think that's super cool.
That would be it. And or anyone who were, you know, the forefathers of the internet who built, like, like AOL.
Yeah.
You know, like what happened there? Like, you know, like, tell us what really happened. Like, there's a lot of but yeah. I mean, back then, there's don't think the expectations of delivery of what we believe email is. Like, if Gmail went down today, everyone's upset, right?
Oh yeah.
Slack goes down all the time and people shit their pants.
Yeah, if AOL went back down back then, it's like, let's turn the TV on.
Yeah.
It was different.
Totally. We funny little story before we go. When we were talking, when this whole thing fell apart for a second, I was telling you how much of a nightmare, like, setting this studio up for season two is, just because it's probably simple for some people and it was just super complicated for us doing it on our own. And we thought, hey, having two of the exact same mics would be a good idea. And, cause why not? Right. Consistency, the look, we'll come to find out that Max won't support two, of the same,
really?
USB mics, particularly, I suppose they have the same serial number, and so it just doesn't recognize the second device. And so yeah, it's just been an absolute nightmare.
It's been a mess.
Yeah.
You guys are going down the wormhole, right? Like, it's now you need this audio mixer outside so you can have all these different mics.
Yeah.
And, oh.
Exactly.
I
don't want to
hear. I know that hole. I didn't go down that one.
Yeah, yeah.
So what we were gonna do is we were like, well, that's a really dumb thing for Blue to program all their devices with the same serial number. So we should say we should have the CEO of Blue on and talk about that fuck up.
That's great. Yeah. Hey, call it out right now.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. You're coming on.
Yeah. See you soon. Yeah.
Awesome, Edwin. Well, thank you so much again for joining us. I think people really resonate with the story and the relatability of what you've been building over the last however many years. So thank you so much for sharing that with everybody.
Thank you. Thank you guys for so much, you know, for having me, and you guys are doing a great job, man. Keep
it up. Thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah, thank you so much.
Take it easy, guys.
Yeah, you too.
Oh, baby, that could have gone real bad. I thought we lost it all.
Yeah? Oh, like you thought it, like...
I thought for sure. Woo!